Today is Tuesday, October 24th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Doug Bernard, live in Washington. Coming up, two Republican senators unleashed against President Trump. China rapidly expands its influence in Pakistan, and later, an early start to Veterans Day in the U.S.
We're at war. This is an ongoing war with no end in sight, and the transition back to civilian life is almost too big of a mountain to climb.
That and much more coming up in the next half hour on International Edition. U.S. President Donald Trump met with Republicans in the Senate today, hoping to advance his plans to cut taxes for corporations and the middle class, even as he traded taunts with a key lawmaker, Senator Bob Corker of Tennessee. In an interview with ABC News, Senator Corker said on Tuesday that President Trump should leave tax law changes to congressional committees and not limit lawmakers' ability to agree on a plan. But Senator Corker went on to say that the president is purposely breaking down relationships around the world and is, in his words, debasing America. He stopped just short of calling the president a liar.
You know, we just haven't used that word in our family, but, you guys can easily check just what's occurred and know that much of what he said is untrue, but all of it is untrue. Some of that you wouldn't be able to check, but so he's utterly untruthful.
Senator Corker's comments prompted President Trump to respond with a series of tweets attacking the senator, no surprising, calling him a lightweight, incompetent, and accusing him of setting back the United States. Shortly later, Senator Jeff Flake, a Republican from Arizona, announced his intention not to seek re-election next year. Senator Flake told reporters that he was, quote, out of step with his party in the era of Trump.
The White House just described the remarks we made on the Senate floor today as petty.
I would invite anybody to read the remarks or watch the speech and come to their own conclusion.
If he's as egregious as you say he is, why have only two of you spoken out?
I think more people have spoken out than that.
Senate?
There's been more of them spoken out than that. I think you'll see more in the future.
Why does it take a retirement to speak out like this?
I've not exactly been quiet for the past past couple of years during the campaign and since. So I've got a book you can read if you want. But I certainly think that, being unencumbered by a race coming up, it is easier to speak out, although I haven't exactly done it. If I could run the kind of race I'd like to run, and believe I could win a Republican primary, I might go forward. But there's a very narrow path now as a Republican. I'm a traditional Republican, limited government, economic freedom, free trade, pro-immigration, and that's a very narrow path right now in a Republican primary.
So in sum, sparring words from members of Congress and the president. Well, no doubt this is all being reflected on social media, if we couldn't guess that already. We're joined by VOA's Andrew Palcheski. Andrew, what is happening out there on this?
Well, Tuesday already started with a lot of talk about Senator Bob Corker and the back and forth on Twitter, President Trump tweeting at him, saying that he was obstructionist, that he was helping to push the country backward. Senator Corker using the hashtag alert the daycare staff, referring to a previous comment that he made that the Trump White House was like an adult daycare center. And if that wasn't crazy enough, that was really dominating the headlines on social media until Tuesday afternoon, when Arizona Senator Jeff Flake announced that he was not running for re-election next year. He had a very impassioned speech on the Senate floor.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of people on social media saying that this is a stunning display of the toll of partisan politics. You have to remember that Senator Jeff Flake and Senator Bob Corker are both Republicans. They're the same party as President Trump.
Right.
To have Republicans
but
attacking
from
each other like this is just very surprising for a lot of people on social media.
Right, but more from the moderate ring, Senator Corker has served for a long time. and is seen as a sort of elder hand in terms of at least foreign policy, because he chairs that committee. And yet he sent out on Twitter today the same truths from an utterly untruthful president. That just seems extraordinary to me.
It is. And I think, and this is really what we've seen in the past 9 or 10 months since the inauguration. There should not be a surprise to any of our listeners that President Trump loves to use Twitter. He said that it's his way of communicating directly with the American people. But often that communication comes in the form of attacks on his opponents. Oftentimes, not just political attacks, but personal attacks. And I think with Senator Corker, what you're seeing in that statement and the tweets that he's sent out about President Trump is trying to rebut that and to face some of those, not just political attacks, but the personal attacks as well.
Well, we saw some back and forth attacks, I guess you could call them, between President Trump and Senator Corker earlier today, trading, let's just say, barbs. But then later today, Senator Jeff Flake, a Republican from Arizona, had this to say, which I thought was extraordinary. "We must never allow ourselves to lapse into thinking that this is just the way things are now. If we simply become used to this condition, then heaven help us." That strikes me. I'm curious what people on social media are saying, because that strikes me as a unusual statement.
It is. And it's, for many people on social media, a sign of this upheaval in the Republican Party, that President Trump has alienated a lot of Senate Republicans, congressional Republicans, some of whom are now speaking out against him and doing so in very stark terms that we haven't really heard before. So there's a lot of interest in that and a lot of surprise, shock, disbelief, all those words we're seeing on social media. Now, that's not universal, because there are others who are supporters of Trump saying that this is part of what he pledged during the campaign. Of course, that one phrase that we remember, draining the swamp,
right,
where he said he was going to clean out Washington, get out all of the entrenched interests and focus on people who wanted to make America great again. Well, those Trump supporters are seeing Bob Corker and Jeff Flake saying that they're not going to run again for the Senate part of that draining of the swamp. And particularly with Senator Corker's comments, they're saying that he's either unstable or unfit, with Senator Flake coming out and saying these things about the president, saying that he's not someone who wants to work in a bipartisan nature. That's the line coming from the Trump administration and the Trump supporters. We're also seeing the name Steve Bannon, who is, of course, the White House aide who is now running or helping to run the far-right website Breitbart.
Well, in what context? Why is Steve Bannon coming? I mean, we all know Steve Bannon, but why is he coming up again now?
Steve Bannon has been a fierce opponent of Senator Jeff Flake. He has been, Senator Flake has been someone that he has targeted, saying that he's obstructionist to the president's agenda, going as far as supporting a primary challenger to Senator Flake in the Republican primary leading up to that Senate election in 2018. So many people on social media saying that this is Steve Bannon's doing. It's a big win for him. I saw one tweet that said this is another scalp he can add to his collection of Republicans, Democrats, people across the board that he's targeted and he's gotten to either resign or leave office or has belittled or diminished what power they had. It's kind of indicative of this strange situation we're in with the Republican Party, where you have establishment Republicans like Senators Corker and Flake who are trying to reject some of the far right or the more conservative parts of the party. And then you have those conservative parts of the party like Steve Bannon, like the Trump administration, who are really trying to push the party in a different direction. It's something that we haven't really seen in modern political times. I guess that, you know, people on social media can't even compare it to the Tea Party rallies that we saw. That was kind of the first iteration of this, where the Republican Party started to push right. This is uncharted territory, and it's something that a lot of people are concerned with, but a lot of people are saying, great, let's get rid of the system. Let's do it our way. And as I said, you know, make America great again is that phrase they keep using.
Andrew Palcheski, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Andrew Palcheski is VOA's social media editor. Here are some of the top stories we're following at this hour at VOA News. Russia vetoes a UN resolution to extend the Syrian gas attacks investigation. U.S. lawmakers accuse Myanmar of conducting ethnic cleansing. Aid groups halt sea rescues in the Mediterranean. And the U.S. government slated to announce additional border restrictions. You can find expanded coverage of these and many more stories at voanews.com. This is International Edition.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports. For detailed information about your favorite sports, visit our website, voaafrica.com. And if you want to chat with me and sports fans in Africa and all over the world, visit my Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page. There, the sports talk never stops. So come on, join the action with the Sunny Side of Sports.
This is Science in a Minute.
Two of the most common fears people have are arachnophobia, which is a fear of spiders, and ophidophobia, the fear of snakes. Whether they live in rural communities or in the heart of the big city, people generally get at least a little anxious at the thought of a spider crawling up their arm or a snake slithering between their toes. New research from German and Swedish scientists suggests our fears of spiders and snakes is hereditary and has its origin in evolution. Researchers found babies as young as 6 months who haven't learned of possible dangers associated with some spiders and snakes display signs of stress when they see pictures of the creepy crawly creatures. When shown a photo of a spider or snake instead of a similarly sized and colored flower or fish, the baby's pupils were found to get considerably bigger. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You're listening to International Edition, coming to you live from VOA in Washington, D.C. I'm Doug Bernard. An unprecedented Chinese financial and construction effort is rapidly developing Pakistan's strategically located Arabian seaport of Gwadar into one of the world's largest transit and transshipment cargo facilities. VOA's Ayaz Ghul reports that both sides are hoping to turn the port city into the gateway of a multi-billion-dollar bilateral economic corridor being built to connect the two allied nations.
The deep-water Gwadar port lies at the convergence of three of the most commercially important regions of the world, the oil-rich Middle East, Central Asia, and South Asia. Beijing is developing Gwadar as part of the China-Pakistan Economic Corridor, known as CPEC. The two countries launched the 15-year project in 2015 to jointly build highways, railways, power plants, communications, and industrial zones in Pakistan, with a Chinese investment initially estimated at $46 billion. The aim is to link Gwadar to landlocked western China to give it a shorter and secure route through Pakistan to global markets. Some in Pakistan are worried skilled Chinese laborers, engineers, and businesses will flood the country, hurting domestic industries.
I think it is not true.
Dostain Khan Jamaldini, the top Pakistani administrator at the port, says about 65% of the labor force on construction and other projects at Gwadar is Pakistani, and the number of Chinese is currently just over 300.
Look now, this is the building you can see, which is under construction, all prefabricated with the Chinese technology. For erecting such a massive building in 2 or 3 months, I don't think so that we can do it right now. But yes, with this work, gradually the transfer of technology is also coming to Pakistan. And it will further minimize the presence of Chinese experts and engineers from Pakistan.
Chinese fuel imports and trading cargo will be loaded on trucks and ferried to and from the western Xinjiang region through the Karakoram Highway, snaking past snow-capped peaks in northern Pakistan. Officials anticipate Gwadar will become South Asia's biggest shipping center within 5 years, with a yearly capacity of handling 13 million tons of cargo. And by 2030, they say the port will be handling up to 400 million tons of cargo annually. Security concerns and India's claims over some of the territory crossed by the massive project remain key challenges for Gawadar and CPEC in general. Just beyond Gawadar's two semicircular bays, the Arabian Sea meets the Persian Gulf, and local fishermen ply the crystal blue waters as they have for generations. The coastal city's poverty-stricken residents are mostly fishermen and boat makers. They are hoping new employment opportunities will be created for them in the wake of the massive development underway in Gawadar. But residents say hours-long daily power outages and a scarcity of water are the immediate problems facing them.
We are facing frequent power blackouts and water shortages.
We got no fish today and came back empty handed.
Ayaz Gul for VOA News, Gawadar, Pakistan.
VOA's International Edition continues. A spokesman for the California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection told reporters recently that some fires are now between 50 and 60% contained. But firefighters across that state are still battling at least 16 fires. The death toll rose to at least 40 on Saturday. But Fire Captain Jimmy Bernal says it's a heartbreaking situation.
The biggest thing is we have lost way too many people on this fire. The intensity of the fire was incredible, so they're lost, and there's some multiple uncounted for, so the potential of more fatalities is huge, which is very, very sad.
Evacuees from a number of counties in California have been allowed to return home, as firefighters say they have turned a corner in containing blazes that have devastated the state. That said, for many, they have no home to go back to.
I have, you know, every one of my friends that live anywhere close by here, that we've lived here 29 years, they are homeless, and none of them can find places to live. None of them can find places to live. And one of our friends down the street, I mean, he's 98 years old. Him and his wife, 92 years old, lived there for 60 years, and they're homeless.
Some 5,700 homes and businesses have been destroyed in the fires. The strong, dry Santa Ana winds that blow down from the mountains every late summer and early fall are creating the conditions that make the fires spread even more rapidly. Well, to natural disasters of a different sort now. After a deadly earthquake in 1985, authorities in Mexico City decided they must start constructing houses that can withstand strong shakes. Government buildings, hospitals, and schools are now built according to stricter rules, while architects are pushing for their application to other structures as well, especially high-rise apartment buildings. And that, in the light of the most recent earthquakes, is saving lives. VOA's George Pudich has more.
For most people living in large cities, the only affordable dwellings are apartments in high-rise buildings. But when the city is built on soft soil and close to a fault line, where one plate of the Earth's crust pushes against another, as in the case of Mexico City, earthquakes can be exceptionally deadly.
In this case, the Cocos Plate, which is out in the ocean, pushes underneath the North American Plate, which is where the continent is. And as it goes underneath, where it rubs between the two is where the majority of earthquakes are.
The main reason why traditionally built high-rise buildings suffer catastrophic damage in strong earthquakes is their rigid construction, which does not dampen and dissipate the energy transmitted from the ground into the walls. That was not the case for the 246-meter-high Torre Reforma building, which withstood the September quake. It was built last year, according to the codes adopted after the 1985 earthquake. It has triangular construction with openings in the walls that look like a design feature, but serve a very practical purpose.
Those openings allowed the concrete walls to bend and to move differently in order to take the seismic force and to liberate energy.
Another improvement over the traditional construction is a 60-meter deep foundation, as well as diagonal supports.
The diagonals help the building to control the lateral movements. So in this case, the diagrid, which is this one, also allows to support the load and bring it back to the concrete walls. That's why the building behaves like that. Okay. And we are very happy with what happened with the building, because the building behaves beautifully.
Scientists say close monitoring of seismic activity, efficient public alert system, and construction of buildings according to earthquake-proof codes can significantly reduce property damage and loss of life when an earthquake strikes. George Putich, VOA News, Washington.
From the ordinary to the extraordinary, you never know what in the world will happen next.
The world is watching with grave concern as Russia has positioned its military.
You should not allow anyone to deprive you of your right to determine the future.
We are using this against terrorist groups coming from Turkey.
With a landing on
civilians. And sponsored by, no, we are not killing civilians.
With all that's happening, VOA News works to keep you up to date every hour of every day. So when you want to know what's new, you know what to do. Tune in your radio or click on the internet. World News on the hour, every hour, or at your convenience at voanews.com.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
Yeehaw! Well, you're listening to VOA's International Edition, coming to you live from Washington, D.C. The nation's official recognition of Americans' veterans, annually on November 11th, Veterans Day, got an early start this year with a star-studded concert kicking off a new fundraising movement for organizations that help the men and women who served in uniform. VOA's David Byrd tells us about Vets Aid.
Joe Walsh is best known as a guitarist, both with the James Gang and later with the Eagles. But he is also the son of a military flight instructor who died while on active duty in Japan. Walsh says that because of his family history and his previous work with wounded veterans, he decided to start Vets Aid along the lines of the Farm Aid concerts started by country singer Willie Nelson.
We're at war. This is an ongoing war with no end in sight. And the transition back to civilian life is almost too big of a mountain to climb. Four times as many people are injured than actually killed. And I just decided that I can do something about it to help.
Walsh recruited what he called his guitar army, including blues phenom Gary Clark Jr., Keith Urban, and the Zac Brown Band.
Something wrong been going on.
Clark started the nearly four-hour concert with some of his hits, including Next Door Neighbor Blues and a cover of Come Together by the Beatles. Keith Urban had the crowd on its feet with his set, including Sweet Thing, Blue Ain't Your Color, and Wasted Time. The Zac Brown Band covered two guitar anthems in their set, Bohemian Rhapsody by Queen, and The Devil Went Down to Georgia by the Charlie Daniels Band. Then Illinois Senator Tammy Duckworth, herself a combat wounded veteran from Iraq, came on stage to urge the nearly 7,500 fans to support Vets Aid and to help Joe Walsh help veterans.
So tonight, I'm so grateful for my friend Joe Walsh, and I'm proud to introduce him. I'd also like you to join me in dedicating tonight's performance to the memory of his father, Lieutenant Robert Newton Fiddler.
The 69-year-old Walsh played several of his hits, including Funk No. 49, Life's Been Good, Rocky Mountain Way, and In the City. Joe Walsh says he hopes the concert is the first of many to help smaller organizations that work directly with veterans.
our guys are coming home shattered. It's like a forgotten war over here. You don't see it on the news or anything. But we are at war. Raising the public awareness so that we all start to help vets is my goal.
All the proceeds from the concert go to help veterans organizations. Walsh says he thinks the effort is off to a good start, and he's hopeful that it will grow.
Thanks to all you vets.
In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
I'm James Butte, host of Daybreak Africa. Join me every weekday mornings at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of the show through our listener's mail segment. Just send your views to daybreakafrica@voanews.com or call us on 202-205-9942. That's Daybreak Africa, your breakfast show at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
And that is VOA's International Edition to this hour. Thanks so much for being with us. Remember, you can always check for the latest news at our website, voanews.com. We'll see you again tomorrow.
An editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Cambodian Prime Minister Hun Sen's government took legal steps to disband the Cambodian National Rescue Party, or CNRP. The U.S. is also deeply concerned by the National Assembly's passage of amendments to Cambodia's election law. If ratified, these amendments, in conjunction with the lawsuit by the Cambodian Ministry of Interior to dissolve the CNRP, would effectively disenfranchise the millions of people who voted for the CNRP in the 2013 and 2017 elections, said State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert. If the main opposition party is disbanded, Hun Sen's government plans to redistribute its 55 seats in the lower house of the National Assembly to five political parties that didn't win any seats in the 2013 general election. In a statement, CNRP lawmakers, all of whom boycotted the legislative session, called the approval by ruling Cambodian People's Party members of parliament an abuse of power and the will of the people. This is part of a trend by the Cambodian government to stamp out dissent from all sources, including the press. Recently, government authorities shuttered an English-language newspaper, the Cambodia Daily, for allegedly not paying a large tax bill. More than a dozen radio stations that broadcast dissident voices or used programming from the Voice of America and Radio Free Asia were forced to stop broadcasting for alleged breach of regulations. Genuine competition is essential to democracy and to the legitimacy of the 2018 national elections, said spokesperson Nauert. History proves that suppressing legitimate political activity leads to more long-term instability rather than less. We urge government officials to consider the serious implications of their recent actions, and we renew our call that the leader of the CNRP, Kem Sokha, be released from prison.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.